What's going on, FA Nation? Welcome back. This is the Fantasy Alarm NASCAR DFS podcast. I am joined, as always, by our NASCAR three-time FSWA writer of the year, Matt Sells. I am Dan Malin. I apologize if you can hear some loud noises outside my apartment. I live near the Braves Stadium. It is Friday night. It is a home game. They do fireworks every Friday night. But Matt, we are previewing Dover this weekend. Great race, intermediate package, short track. We are fresh off a Tyler Reddick win at Talladega. How are you feeling heading into this week?
I'm feeling pretty good. I think Dover can put on a pretty good show. I know that it can be a little boring sometimes, but this intermediate package has been spectacular, even when they've run it at tracks where it's normally not great, right? They ran it, at Bristol earlier this year, and that put on perhaps the best Bristol race we've seen in maybe a half a decade. So hopefully we get a similar outcome here. And there's actually two lanes, there's some passing, whatnot. But the Monster Mile is usually a pretty grueling track, 1 mile, all cement, high bank. So it's basically like Bristol that's twice as long, right? We've heard drivers talk about how grueling this track is. The G's that you put not only in the corners, but going into the corner. The coolest shot I think we get of this track is when they shoot straight down the outside wall of the straightaway, and you can literally watch them basically fall into the corner because there's like a drop off. So we'll see. Hopefully we get some tire fall off. Hopefully the weather's nice. And we'll have a grand old time for 400 miles of racing at, 400 laps. Yeah, which is 400 miles at Dover.
Yeah, so they're hitting the finale of the fireworks show. So I apologize if it gets a little interrupted by noise. 400 laps. So on DraftKings specifically, we will just dive right into lineup building strategies. 400 laps, plenty of Dominator points available. 0.45 points per fastest lap, 0.25 points per lap led. Definitely the kind of week where you kind of want to squeeze in at least two, maybe even three guys starting within the top 10, maybe even the top 15.
I'm just refreshing. I did some research earlier in the week, and then a whole lot of stuff happened. Apologies for the lateness of this. We've had some scheduling stuff, and then we were going to do it earlier today, except I had to deal with tornadoes out here in Lincoln, Nebraska, and in Omaha. I was back and forth doing errands with the family, and we were dodging tornadoes the whole way, and then I lost power. So it's later in the day than we thought. So if I pull up our trusty racing reference info here, it's tough to judge because I feel like they've run a different package here each of the last couple of races. But passing last time around was possible. We saw Truex win from 17th. Great. It was run on a Monday. Yeah, it was run on a Monday last year because it was rained out, and then they ran it on Monday, which basically automatically meant that Martin Truex Jr. was going to win because he wins like all of the Monday races. But we did see William Byron lead almost half of the race, 193 laps. We saw Chastain, who started 14th. He led 98 laps. So it does look like you should probably focus on two dominators, if not a third. Here, if we go back, they also ran it on Monday, May 2nd in 2022. So two straight Monday races. So hopefully we're not getting that happening again. But again, we saw another guy lead more than 100 laps in that one. We saw a couple others top 70 laps. So we're looking at basically two dominators here. Though, I do have to say, it's not like they're coming from the pole. Last two races here, the dominators have not come from the pole. In fact, the guy who started first in 2022 led a total of 18 laps. That would be one Mr. Chris Buescher. And then he finished eighth. So I would say that two dominators is probably the way to build.
I actually did notice that. I do an early Fantrax preview every week, and I kind of picked up on the fact that, you know, I saw that the last couple of dominators were kind of failing to reach 25 laps led. But you alluded to him. My favorite play heading into practice and qualifying. We are recording this Friday night. Practice and qualifying for the Cup Series isn't until Saturday morning. It's really hard to ignore in two races what Ross Chastain in the one car for Trackhouse Racing, what he's done. In his two races here, he had a 125.2 driver rating in 2022. And then last year, where he led 98 laps with 41 fastest laps, a 129.5 driver rating. And I think we should also note that this track, it's one of the few that falls into where he has been really good. We're talking about these short tracks that do incorporate the intermediate package. So we're talking about Nashville, where he won last year. We're talking about Phoenix, where he won last year in the championship race. But it's forgotten because Ryan Blaney won the championship in that
race.
And so it does feel like this is going to be a week to get some exposure to Trackhouse. And I'm not limiting this just to Ross. There is a part of me that still feels like they should just match that setup with Daniel Suarez as well. And sure, it sucks that we can't bet Ross because he opened as a plus 750 favorite, which isn't great. If he had opened at maybe closer to like 9-1 or 10-1, I probably would have thrown a unit at it. But at plus 750, I don't think we're getting a ton of great value just for pure outright winning odds. But for DFS, we've seen him in two next-gen races get dominator points here and in a 400-lap race. Those are incredibly valuable.
I would agree. Chastain's been phenomenal at this track. His teammate was great until last year. He kind of wrecked out. He had some issues pretty early. He did look fast in practice and qualifying and then kind of wrecked out. So I'm with you. I'm not limiting exposure only to Chastain. I think we can totally go with Suarez, who has also looked pretty fast in these shorter tracks with intermediate setups on them this year. So, I'm right there. Also, if we're paying attention to teams, Hendrick has historically done quite well at Dover. This tends to be a track where they do quite well. We've seen Kyle Larson lead 260 plus laps here in the past. We've seen William Byron dominate. Chase Elliott has a win here not that long ago.
The crazy thing about Larson's domination here is that a lot of it actually came when he was in lesser equipment with Chip Ganassi.
Correct. He's actually looked faster in Ganassi equipment than he has at Hendrick equipment here.
Make it make sense.
In the last six races here, he's run four of them. He's won, finished second, sixth, and then 32nd last year when he wrecked out. But still pretty good, right? So with that, do we want to do what we did last week and kind of show the good old-fashioned?
Probably for the best. I mean, we're only going to be able to see pricing.
Right.
But, you know, like we can get a good idea of like what we should be looking to do with two dominator builds, potentially three dominator builds. You know, typically with like your three dom builds, you are typically hoping to nail somebody in the 7, 8, 9K range that can go out and maybe lead 30-ish laps and still score a top 10 finish. But I think this is a good, you know, practice, especially. I think this is more important for when we're doing, you know, multi-dominator builds as opposed to when we're building for lineups for like Talladega or Daytona.
I would agree. So with that, we'll go ahead and we'll do what we did last week. We'll share our handy-dandy pricing screen. Bring that in. Look at that.
Look at that.
Look at that. So we've got Kyle Larson leading things off. 11-5. I don't think that's any surprise, right? We just said he's dominated here. He's been fast. Arguably the fastest car on track just about every week. It's just up to him if he's going to win or screw it up somehow, right? But I do want to say It is interesting to see Truex second on this pricing list.
Yes, because it's mostly
he's done really well at Dover. It is
one of that's more of a track history thing, if anything.
It is one of his home tracks, right?
He has like 9 of those.
He does. He does have a lot of them. But, you know, Richmond was a pretty good run for him, clearly 228 laps led. But, again, that was a short track in the short track package. It did not have the intermediate. He did finish second at Bristol, ran pretty well. You know, we're going back. Shriners was Phoenix, so, again, kind of a shorter track in the intermediate package. So it's not necessarily not unwarranted that he's this high when you combine his Dover history and his success in this package recently. It's just a little surprising. Like, I would rather drop $300 down and go get Byron.
I can't blame you, only because we've seen Byron have success on so many different tracks, and it's kind of like, I know that his best finish at Dover is fourth, but he's done that, I think, in 3 of the last 4 races here, and he was flat out the best car, I think, in last year's race, where he led like over 190 laps. He had a 125 plus driver rating. I mean, if they show up and just match the setup to last year's race, so long as the track conditions are the same, like, would it surprise anybody if William Byron dominated and won this race? No, it would not, because he's already won 3 times this year.
Yeah, he's won on different tracks too.
Yeah.
You've got a plate race, you've got a road race, and then Cookout 400 was, why am I blank? Oh, Martinsville. So a short track. So I could see him showing up and running quite well here. I mean, obviously, did not have the best day at Bristol, but it's more because of they screwed up and wrecked rather than anything
else. But Bristol can be so tough because you almost have to run a perfect race. Like, even if you're just fighting to stay on the lead lap. Like, this thought process goes beyond just having the lead, because if you're the lead, like, yes, it's nice because you kind of control a lot of other drivers' fates. Like, you can lap them, and then their strategy has to change. If you have speed at Bristol and you're able to maintain the lead lap and still, like, have the track position, then I have faith that you can – then I'm just going to trust the speed. But, like, Dover is different because it is by far twice the size of Bristol.
Right.
It's not as hard to fall off the lead lap, but, like, you know, track position still matters. Still plenty of laps to be had, or led, rather. And so it's harder to get lapped, but I still treat it almost with as much variance as Bristol, or I try to keep that in mind.
We could also have a big one just as easily at Dover as we did at
Bristol. For sure.
Because it's still tight racing surfaces. If you have a tire problem, you can pretty easily, you know, woe up and take out a good chunk of the field. So there is still that, although less likely to happen. Anybody else here in this top tier kind of catcher? I mean, we already talked about Ross Chastain. Frankly, he's a bargain at 10-2 coming here. I mean, he's been flat out the best car on the track the last 2 years.
No, so, like, basically when I did my early week preview for Fantrax, it was Chastain, just based on what he's done in 2 races here in the next gen car. It was Truex for the track history, and it was Byron, just based on what he did last year. I still did write up Larson. It's hard not to preview Larson at almost any track, just because
if he's on the track, he's got a shot to win. Like, it's,
and like a lot of the track history for Larson, and we alluded to this earlier in the podcast, it comes from his time with Chip Ganassi Racing, a now defunct NASCAR team. And he's now in better equipment, but like his phenomenal runs here came in lesser equipment. So it's like, I'll never write him off at a track like Dover. But honestly, I kind of want to go back to Ty Gibbs this week, because he's kind of been quiet. the last two or three races.
Yep.
But if we're talking about, you know, short tracks where JGR tends to thrive, but also the intermediate package, why don't we look at Ty Gibbs?
Yep.
Because for Bristol, he led 137 laps, still at a top 10, had, you know, 100 plus points on DK. And then I think at Phoenix, he led 57 laps, grabbed the top three, had 60 fantasy points on DraftKings. And now here he is, 8,500. It's not as short of a track, but it's still a one-mile track. It's the intermediate package. Why not? Because we're finally getting Ty Gibbs at the odds that I want to bet him outright to win a race.
Correct. Yeah. So we had – you saw me highlight these as Dan was talking. Pennzoil 400 is Vegas. So intermediate package, right? Not a directly comparable track. Vegas is not comparable to Dover, but it is the same package. Top five finish, 48 DK points. Shriners was Phoenix. 1 mile track, it's flat compared to Dover, which is steep. But again, intermediate package, top five finish, 57 laps led. Dover, or Bristol, is the Food City 500. High banked concrete oval, half the length of Dover. Led a very good chunk of that race. I think we were all disappointed he didn't wind up winning it thanks to late race issues, but still finished ninth.
Yeah.
So I'm perfectly fine. Like, if you go back to where he was paying value, this is the package and the kind of track it was. So I'm perfectly fine with Ty Gibbs at what is basically a value price from where we've seen him. I mean, I can make the argument that there's not really – I mean, there's Chase Elliott, which is fine. But between Chase Elliott and Ty Gibbs, there's not really anybody else that intrigues me at that price.
And the other thing is, too, is like, you know, casual DFS players that, you know, maybe do this just to get the Ironman credit on DraftKings, they're going to look at his results the last 4 weeks, and they're going to see 14 points at Talladega. They're going to see 28 points at Texas. You know, 20 and 20 between what looks like Richmond and I think Martinsville.
Yes.
And that's a quick turnoff, but I don't think they fully understand, like, it's a package and a track type that he's run well at. I think in the Xfinity series, he may have grabbed a couple. I don't like really looking at Xfinity results for young drivers here, because this is just a track that Justin Allgaier in the Xfinity series dominates at. And so he can kind of make anybody look like a beginner if he's just kind of like collecting all the
dominator points. It's also the fact the Xfinity cars drive so much different than the Cup cars.
For sure. Yeah.
So it's like your driving style, if you figure it out in one car, it doesn't necessarily translate to the other car, even though you know how to drive the track.
Yeah.
So,
but ahead of qualifying and practice, Ty Gibbs is a guy that I'm looking to be overweight on. And I don't really care where he starts, because I know there's dominator potential here. We saw it last month on these tracks in this package. I don't really care what he's done the last four races that don't really apply to this.
Yeah, I'm not sure there's really anything he could do at practice or qualifying that would turn me off.
Aside from junking the car.
Well, let's say he runs some fast laps at practice and then junks the car. Then he's got PD, right? Because he's going to start in the back, and then he's got some speed. He can move up. He can use pit strategy. Whatnot. If he shows up and he's slow and then he qualifies poorly, then maybe okay. But I probably still sprinkle him into some GPPs just in case.
Yeah.
Because at a mid-tier price, it's not like you need dominator points out of him to get value. You simply need him to finish well.
And at 8,500, he could probably, and it does depend on where he starts, but he could probably still hit value, even if he starts like P7 and just finishes in the top five.
Yeah.
With just a few, like a skosh of dominator points.
Just a skosh.
Just a skosh. A little surprised that Tyler Reddick, coming off a win, is priced right below him, who has actually, you know, he was fourth at Texas.
It is technically a price jump for him. He was $8,000 last week.
Yeah, but the problem I have with that is that his price his price point has oscillated so much. It's like we never get like it's always the highs and the lows of Tyler Reddick's pricing. We never really get him where he should be priced in like the mid 9K range. Like last week at Talladega, he was $8,000. At Texas, he was $10,000. For Martinsville,
Bill is 8,500. Then Richmond's 87.
Coda, and then we go to Coda 10,500. Like
Bristol is $9,000. Phoenix is 8,500.
Yeah, he should be a 9K driver.
Yeah, he was 7,800 at Daytona for what it's worth.
This is stupid. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, again, it's a kind of a package thing. Like if you look at the results, okay, sure. Talladega is what it is, whatnot, right? But at these tighter tracks, finished seventh at Martinsville, top 10 at Richmond. Sorry, I have to move my cat because her tail is beating the bejesus out of my computer right now. So, you know, top 10 at Richmond. And then you get to Bristol. He was looking good, and then he had some tire issues, if I'm not mistaken. His tires went down. Everybody's tires went down there. Phoenix, top 10. He led almost 70 laps. So this may not be the best track for Tyler Reddick, but I'm still going to take a shot on that speed.
Yeah, like...
But there's a limit. It's not like Ty Gibbs where he could literally start anywhere.
Sure. Like, because, you know, Ty Gibbs at the end of the day, he drives for JGR. And I know, like, the Toyota affiliation between 23XI and JGR,
it
clearly exists. I just think that what we've seen from Gibbs in this package on these – because it really just boils down to, like, what we're looking at with Ross Chastain. It's like it's an intermediate package, but it's on a shorter track. And so this should play to the strengths of both Chastain and Gibbs. Honestly, I'm kind of hoping Gibbs wins this race.
I got that impression.
I managed to get him at 16-1 outright.
I'm going back to the 2022 race for Loop Data Stats so that we can pull up where Tyler Reddick was. So he started 26th. Mid-race was 5th. Finished 30th. Because he wrecked out. But what was his average percent in top 15? Let's see. Percent in top 15. Tyler Reddick.
Oh, my God.
Not great. But what was his average running position? Here we go. Sort by average running position. Because it, you know, not all 30 place finishes are created equal here.
No.
No. Tyler Reddick's average running position was 22nd. So not ideal, but he does.
That's still not great.
He has finished 8th and 7th around that. So that's why I was trying to check it out. So he does have two top 10s to his credit here. So there's that. What are we doing with the RFK duo, who are back basically the same prices again? They really want to keep these guys together, man.
It's so tough for Brad. Like, I feel for the guy because he's finished 2nd the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And it's still like 100 plus races since his last win.
Yeah, he looked very frustrated last week.
But he was top 5 at Bristol and Phoenix.
Yeah. So was, I mean, Buescher was
7. And he's 7,700.
Yep.
Like, if he starts in the teens, I will be drastically overweight.
And in the last 6 races here, he has a better average finish than Ross Chastain.
Ugh. Good. Yeah.
So there's that. But yes, if he starts like... Where? What? In the teens? Is he going to be underplayed because he's not going to have as much PD as other guys? I'd still play him if he starts like 10th. Yeah. I'd still play him a decent amount because the odds
especially that he finishes top 5 price tag, especially because like if if you can get somehow get a top five out of him, you almost don't really need any Dominator points, because at 7,700, he can still pay off that price tag with a top five finish if he starts P10.
Correct.
Now, granted, like, you are kind of relying on the numbers, because give credit when it's due, RFK seemingly nailed the setup at Bristol, at Phoenix.
Yep.
You kind of hope that they do it with Dover. I honestly, in my early week look at this race, I did overlook them. All the love that I gave to Ty Gibbs and how he's looked in this aero package on shorter tracks that incorporate the intermediate package, I should have probably acknowledged that RFK deserves some love for that too, and I whiffed on that. But yeah, really hard to ignore. The problem is like, now that I see like Buescher is $300 cheaper than Buescher, like, it almost seems like Buescher is the leverage play.
It does. It does, doesn't it? Because it feels like people will go, oh, well, they're basically the same, so I'll save some money. And then all of a sudden, Keselowski isn't.
And also, like, I know Buescher won three races last year, but they're still among casual players, probably just more name recognition with Keselowski.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yep, I would agree. And they've been pretty well identical in their setups and finishes at similar tracks the last couple of years. So there's that. This is where things get wonky, I think.
Yeah, 7K range.
Like the bottom half of it, we've got Bubba, we've got Josh Berry, Briscoe, Gragson, Austin Dillon, Suarez, we already talked about.
Suarez is so cheap. It's the cheapest he's been all year.
Like, I feel like the only trap. Two guys I don't want to make.
Feels like a trap.
I feel like Austin Dillon and Josh Berry are the only two guys I don't want to make an argument for.
Well, for Berry, I think the argument for Berry kind of goes back to what we've said about Stewart Haas racing multiple times this year. It seems like they show up fast with two cars, and then they show up slow with the other two cars.
Right, but which two?
Exactly. No. I totally share that sentiment, because it seems like they nail the setup with Gragson and Briscoe more than they nail it with Berry and Priest.
Right. This shows it, right? Like at Vegas, Berry started 26th, finished 20th. At Phoenix, 36th, finished 26th. Food City, somehow he started on the front row, and that was not a rained out qualifying. He literally had speed to land on the front row, led laps, had fastest laps, finished 12th. But I think that was more due to like a bad pit penalty or a bad pit stop that shuffled him out, if memory serves. But then like the last four races, it's been like, where the heck did he show up from? I don't even count Talladega again, because it's like, stuff's kind of random there. I know it was a lot of fun later this week, but like Gragson, you can make the argument that at these tracks, I mean, Bristol, he wrecked out obviously, but fast at Vegas, fast at Phoenix. Like, I don't know. That's the only problem I have with SHR, is that all four of them are playable, but only two at a time.
I included Berry in my early preview simply because part of me feels like this track does fit his strengths. He has won here in the Xfinity Series, but again, that was with Junior Motorsports, a Chevrolet team.
Yep.
And he could also pick, you know, Justin Allgaier's brain. We were talking about this race beforehand, and we couldn't quite figure out why lower level Chevrolet teams in the Cup Series don't bring up Justin Allgaier for this race, because he runs so well here.
Right.
But at the same time, yeah, I'm still with you that I don't know which SHR cars to play.
I think Briscoe is the one you play, and then the other three you take a shot on that they know it.
I think you're right with Briscoe, because he does have a win at Phoenix, and we have seen him qualify on these short tracks with the intermediate aero package. He's qualified well. And so this does seem like it's more of a Briscoe, potentially Gragson kind of race.
I would also throw Priest in there too. By the way,
this is a shortish track.
Chase Briscoe has finished top 15 here once in his three runs at Dover in the Cup Series. Okay.
So that makes me kind of want to pivot to Ricky Stenhouse.
Okay, but I would play Ryan Preece.
Above Stenhouse, I might agree.
Probably. I mean, I don't know.
The thing that bugs me with Stenhouse is pretty much the same thing that always bugs us with Stenhouse on non-super speedway races. He comes out of nowhere without speed in practice, without any reason to play him, and he can get like a top 10 or a top. For whatever reason, at Dover, a one-mile track with moderate banking, he somehow has a ninth and a 15th place finish here.
And a P2.
Oh, that's right.
He finished second here 2 years ago.
See, I kind of write off what happened in 2022 because it was a great betting year, but at the same time, like, so many teams were trying to figure out this car. Right. Because, like, when Ricky Stenhouse is finishing second at Dover, you know teams just, like, are kind of all on an even keel playing field.
I mean, the next closest in the last six is a 10th place finish. So – it gives a little credence to your argument that people are just figuring it out, right?
Like, yeah.
I don't know. He started 15th and finished second that race, so there's that.
But then last year he started P9 and finished 15th, which I don't hate at his price tag if you're nailing the dominators.
Right.
Because you can get away with a guy losing six spots of position differential if he's cheap. But like the three guys that you have that are getting the dominator points, like they are at least elevating you to a 6x value in their own range, and you can kind of eat the 4x value with Ricky Stenhouse. Now, this is all hypothetical.
Correct.
And if Ricky Stenhouse, go ahead.
What are we doing with 11-time Dover winner Jimmy Johnson? I'm not playing him.
It's incredibly hard to play him.
Right? Like,
what has he done?
So the problem that I have with playing Jimmy Johnson isn't that I think he's washed up. I don't think that. I mean, I think his skills are fading, obviously. But he, a couple of weeks ago, the last time he was behind the wheel of the car and he spun it out, was it Texas? Yeah.
Why is he in the 43?
What?
Why is he not in the 43 this week? Corey Heim is getting the 43 car. Jimmy Johnson is still driving the 84. Why wouldn't you
probably put Johnson? Because they had sponsor commitments and Corey Heim can keep the car on the track better than Jimmy Johnson.
But this is also Heim's debut in the next gen car, isn't it?
Yes.
I don't know.
We've seen guys come up and make their debut and keep things clean. Remember Gateway last year? Who came up and kept it clean and nabbed a top five?
It was either Barry or Zane Smith.
I think it was Zane Smith that kept it clean at Gateway last year and nabbed a top 15.
Yeah.
I think these guys, if they're good to decent at a track and they keep it clean, they can do well. I don't think Jimmy Johnson wants to potentially ruin a sponsor date with him going out there and hoping he can figure it out. Going back to Jimmy Johnson, the reason why I won't play him when he could be the dirt cheapest driver on the planet, I won't play him. Because at Texas, when he spun out on the radio, he said, I know how to drive these cars off the right rear. That's how I grew up driving. That's how I always drove the car off the right rear. So off the corner, he would power it. You put the power in the right rear, you get off that way. That's his driving style. The problem is that's literally the worst tire to do that to in the next gen car based on airflow and the weight of the car and whatnot. That's why he keeps spinning these things out, because his driving style no longer fits the car and he can't adjust it. So I'm never going to play Jimmy Johnson. Doesn't matter if he's my favorite driver of all time. I'm not playing him anymore. I don't know what we're doing with this bottom group. It's going to depend highly on what they do at practice and where they qualify. Todd Gilliland's probably always a play for me at this point. There's very little that Todd Gilliland can do to keep me from playing him.
I'm interested in LaJoy, but it depends on where he starts.
I would say Heim might be a sneaky play because I don't think people are going to play him. And again,
my problem with Heim is like I'm so enamored with the kid because he's from right up the road in Marietta, Georgia, and so I read into the hype. It's exciting, and I wish he could get a full time ride in the Xfinity Series because what he does with Sam Hunt Racing in the Xfinity Series is phenomenal. I hope he can get a JGR opportunity at some point just to move up. 5,800 is so hard to pass up just knowing, because if Eric Jones is in that car, he's probably like 7K.
Probably.
But like you're getting the exact same car for 5,800. And if you buy into Matt's narrative where we see these young drivers come up and still perform well, then yes, Heim at 5,800 is an absolute steal.
I would agree.
But there's risk.
There is risk. I'm not saying it's, you know, in this range, I feel most comfortable with Gilliland.
You know what absolutely blows my mind about the pricing this week?
Maybe Omendinger?
I don't hate that, actually.
Because here's I the know thing. Dover tends to be a rhythm track. And Allmendinger, being a road course guy, he's said previously the tracks where I can get into a rhythm are usually the ones I do better at.
Yeah.
Dover is a rhythm track. So I don't dislike Allmendinger this week.
I'm trying to pull up his Xfinity numbers.
Not to mention, he didn't exactly do poorly at Bristol.
So in 2021 at Dover in the Xfinity Series, he finished fourth. In 2022, he finished sixth. I don't have his Cup Series numbers in front of me. I can't imagine that they're great. Because... So 2021 and 2022, he's in the Xfinity Series. 2023, he was in the Cup Series.
The last time Dinger drove here, he finished 18th.
Yeah, and that's...
He started 29th.
And still decent too. And like the other thing is, even in the few Cup races that he's run this year, he's moved up from wherever he started. And honestly, at 5,900, I'm fine if he just gets me 20 points.
Yeah, at Bristol, he was 6,100 and got 27 points, which is a little under 5X.
Yeah.
About 4.5X. Not terrible.
I really want to.
If you get two Dominators, you can totally survive off of 4.5X from your bargain basement, dude. I'm not playing any of the bottom three.
It's funny because I saw that Wood Brothers had a new team president, but at the same time, like Harrison Burton cannot get that car.
They don't have a new driver though.
No, so. They do not. Like.
I'm sorry, Harrison, but your time's up, man. You've got
he's got to go back down.
If F1 guys get like 8 races to prove what they can do, you, sir, have gotten what? More than that? You've gotten what, 2.5 years? And it's going backwards. It's not going the right way. So
what if Justin Haley starts outside the top 30? Like at Phoenix, he started P33 and finished 24th for 27 points. Bristol, much higher variance. I get it. But he started P32 and finished 17th.
He's made a Rick Ware car playable.
It's so weird.
Everybody pooped on him for going.
We did too. We did too.
Yeah, we did too. Like, why are you going from
Kolig to Rick Ware? And it's.
Boy, did that work out.
It has. Like, he's
so maybe
a backmarker viable.
Maybe we shouldn't crap on the Falcons for picking Michael Penix.
No, we should still crap on the Falcons for picking Michael Penix. They did not need Michael Penix.
Different topic, but I think they do.
Do not apply the Jordan Love argument to him. Love was
no, but what happens if they get – I know this is a tangent, but what happens if the Kirk contract gets voided because of tampering and – then they have nobody except now they have Michael Penix.
Okay, then yes. And their own GM, who is worried that he's going to get caught for tampering, did a great job of covering his own ass.
Exactly. Fantastic. What if, by the way, Kirk Cousins isn't Aaron Rodgers and he can't come back in 7 months from a torn Achilles?
Do we really think the contract's going to get voided?
No. Probably not. We digress. Yeah, that's kind of a look at the field this week for Dover. We're going to flip back here so you can see.
I'm trying to see if we missed anybody. I don't really think we did.
I don't think so. I mean, maybe a few. There's going to be some guys that pop up during practice and qualifying that catch us off guard. You're probably going to be listening to this after practice and qualifying has happened.
Yeah.
I would assume it's already like 11 Eastern Friday night. Practice qualifying fairly early Saturday morning. It's like 9:30 a.m. Central Time. It's 10:30 a.m. Eastern. And then the race is theoretically Sunday at like, what, 2 Eastern? Should be good weather right now. We'll see. Mother Nature has time to change her mind. But yeah, you know, playbook will be out Saturday. This is with all of the normal stuff. Obviously, it wasn't there last week with Talladega because no practice, whatever. But this week we'll get practice. We'll get qualifying. We'll have the normal charts and stuff out. Playbook will be out. Projections out either Saturday evening or Sunday morning.
Awesome. Well, Matt, as always, thank you for your time and best of luck to you this week for Dover and the Worth 400, and best of luck to the FA Nation.